I spoke yesterday with a woman in mourning. She had a lunch date tomorrow with a friend who died yesterday from cancer. And it came to me then that every plan is a tiny prayer to Father Time. Yes. Yes, we live and we make plans and we expect, or sometimes we just hope. We will be there. We will be together to realize them. But we know, we all know it may not be so. And in times like this, when there is so much that hurts and so much that we struggle with, All Souls reminds us of a whole nother scope to times like this, to time itself. Time that is not about tweets or reports or even elections. Time that is defined and bounded by nothing less than life and death, by love and loss. We have each other for howsoever long we have each other. And we inhabit this space this morning, sharing air and breath and life and awareness. We are present to each other and breathtakingly aware that it has not always been so, and it will not always be so. And already in the past year, things are different. And we are missing people that we love. And there are holes in our lives and our hearts and in who we are ourselves and in who we are together because of these people we love that we have lost from this church, from our families, from our friendship circles, always from our hearts. Here and now, as the sun draws away, and the world becomes colder and darker, and the leaves are falling from the trees, and life withdraws from all that we see around us, we remember how mortal we all are, and what it really means to love each other, though we know death parts us. We remember that love requires extraordinary courage, because what we fear most, what all of us fear most, is to lose what we love, to have love leave us. And in the end, if love stays, then life will leave it. And one day our love will receive no reply. And because we recognize this truth, part of living and loving includes countless moments when we hold a vigil even before we lose someone, even before we're close to losing someone. All the times we look at one we love and we watch them breathe and move and think and play, and we are filled with the zest and poignancy and miracle of their living. And how much we dread losing them or being lost to them. All the moments we engage almost as a tribute, a memorial, even though this one we love is right here with us. Right then, we are all together and there because we know this day is coming when it will not be so. And then the days do come upon us, and we all learn the deep truth of the song we just heard, that one of the last and greatest ways we can ever show our love is that we are present at the end to soothe, to comfort, to companion as far as we can, but always in the end to watch the end of life of one we love. There is no greater gift than to be there. And while it can be so hard and fearful to anticipate what that will be like, to hold that final watch, in the end, many times, it is often not what we dread. Within the grimness of an ICU or a sick room and the long hours or days or weeks or months, the final opportunity to offer and act with love for another involves so many small moments of care, of connection, even in the midst of loss and grief, that there also comes an easing, a communion. Sometimes, as Mary Oliver writes, even laughter out of our startled mouths. Amidst all the rest of what we are feeling and going through, the watch at the end of a life offers a kind of solace, a deep solace, and a surprising one. And then the one we loved is gone, and the vigils become true memorials as we seek to come to terms with what has happened to the one we loved and lost and to ourselves. And we have to know that we will not soon be done with this labor of love. Dr. Angelo Bolea, who is a neuropsychologist, all his work is about what it's like to process the experience of being human. And he lays out the geography of loss this way. First, for a year or so, the brain is just trying to figure out how to be with the loss. And this is the time of endless if-onlys and what-ifs. And this is why anniversaries, even anniversaries we were unconscious of during that year, can strike us with such impact at this time. And then year two or so, our brains are now trying to figure out how to construct a life in the presence of the whole, of the loss that we have suffered. And finally, around year three, our brain has come to the point where it is looking for something new. And there is so much wisdom in what he sees for our progression through love and loss. And we can add to it the author and theologian C.S. Lewis's observation that grief, he said, is like a train ride through the Alps. As the path winds around and around and around, and we see a view that slowly, slowly winds through the deep peaks, through the high peaks and the deep valleys, and then sometimes seems to come right around again to a place we thought we had come far from in all that time. And of course, those famous Kubler-Ross stages of grief, of denial and anger and bargaining and depression and acceptance. Myself, I see loss and grief as a series of close spirals. It's sort of like that train ride, but it's more like a slinky. It takes us around and around and around again in a quickly familiar set of thoughts and agonies. But one that, because it is a spiral rather than a circle, one that eventually takes us somewhere. Somewhere different. A new rebalancing of self that allows us to live and still to love and to hold the loss and other losses as we move through our lives. And we remember our loves and we love them still, including in moments like this, or every Sunday when I invite you to stand or raise your hand in silent witness of a loss in the past year. The truth is, every single Sunday when I stand before you in that moment, I think of many I have lost, almost none of them in the past year. And I see them looking back at me or gathered together in an unreal tableau, since many of them did not know each other in life. And some of them I remember and see in my mind's eye, or maybe more my heart's eye, every week, every single week. And others appear very rarely. And some are there and have been since the day I lost them. And some of them have left voicemail messages on my voicemail that I can now never erase. And some of them have Facebook pages where I go and write to them now and again. Some of them are enshrined only in memory. I haven't even a photograph to hold on to. And still, as May Sarton says, the dead move through all of us, still glowing, wound and bound together and flowing. What has been braided together cannot be unbraided. So dark into light, light into darkness spin, our complex love, our mourning without end. It becomes not the weight we carry, but how we carry it. And we see the beauty even in what is troubled. In this windy season, the blown roses, the glowing leaves, whirling and scattering, radiant in every gust. Ultimately, when we are all lucky enough to carry the blessing of love, then we all carry the burden of loss. And the choices we have are only about how to do it. How to love, how to care, how to watch, how to grieve, how to mourn, how to live. And remember, our memories are love's legacy. They are our best inheritance from the souls we have cherished. All of you we have loved and lost, how we love you, how we miss you. Words can never compass it all. We will never get over you. We will never be done with you. And still we live and love, and we make plans, even when the plans are really prayers, because all of this, all of it, is a tribute to the living and the loving we learned from you. Amen.